Okay, so today I'm going to focus on topological versions of SYZ, and we'll forget for the moment the structures that we studied the last few days. I have a feeling we can probably move this and get out of the So what we've seen so far is that we can construct these torus bundles from affine structures, but we still have a problem about compactifying and getting these singular fibers. So what I'm going to do is show you today how you can do that, at least in some of these, or most generic cases, try to do that topologically, at least in a three-dimensional case. So let's study continuous maps, F from X to B. So here we will simply think of X as a six-dimensional manifold, topological manifold, and B as a three-dimensional topological manifold. And we'll consider maps which are, say, proper, so all fibers are compact, connected fibers, and with the general fiber being a torus. So if you consider the category of such maps, that's sort of far too general. I mean, there's all sorts of dreadful things can happen in singular fibers. So let's impose a number of additional restrictions, which do fit with what we might have expected special Lagrangian fibrations to look like if they actually had been C infinity. So let's say F is well behaved. If it satisfies a number of conditions. First of all, the discriminant locus, delta, should be a graph. So we're going to assume a codimension to discriminant locus. I also want to assume some additional bits of structure about the singular fibers, and I'll phrase them the following way. There exists a set crit F contained in X such that, well, first of all, F of crit F is equal to delta. And what this will be is the critical locus. It will be essentially a set of singular points of the singular fibers. And we will assume that XB, if you take any fiber and you remove the critical locus, so the set of singular points, that this is dense in XB. So you can't have sort of huge amounts of singular locus. And third condition is locally on B, i.e., say, over an open set U contained in B, for a small open set, there exists a vector bundle, a rank 3 vector bundle, F. And a possibly degenerating family of lattices, contained in F. So in other words, in general, the this is a full lattice inside a fiber, but in some places it might drop rank, such that F inverse of U minus the critical locus as a bundle, as a fibration over U, coincides with F mod lambda over U. No, no, this is just locally, so, you know, around any point you can find a neighborhood, so maybe B and U. What's that?
That's true of the delta.
That's right, yeah, and it's important. So that's why I need a degenerating family of lattices. And the reason is, so the typical example in two dimensions, typical singular fiber is something like this. Now the critical locus here will be just the point, and what's left over is, so here xb minus the critical locus of f is equal to r cross s1, so there the lattice degenerates to something, a group of rank 1. Another example in the two-dimensional case is where the fiber is type 2, i.e. a pinched sphere, in which case you get xb minus crit f is R2, so there's no lattice elements there.
So why don't you allow the other code of fibers?
Okay, now there's I was going to get that, yeah. The thing this doesn't allow is, for example, I'll draw a complex picture, it doesn't allow something like this, because when you remove the critical locus, I'm not allowed to call the entire branch a critical locus because of this first condition. I don't get something of this form. So this is not allowed. And the reason for not allowing this, it turns out that this condition of being irreducible, I mean, essentially this is saying the fibers are irreducible in an algebra geometric sense. Without that, you can't really hope for a unique topological compactification. If you start allowing reducible singular fibers, there can be many ways to compactify. And the most extreme example is that there is a torus fibration on the quintic, which has lots of reducible fibers. And if you take a look at the complement of the discriminant locus, if you look at the bundle, torus bundle over the complement of the discriminant locus, there's another way of compactifying it to give you the mirror quintic. So that's how bad the indeterminacy and the compactification is. But if all the fibers are irreducible, then you actually, pretty much everything is determined. So there are also, this isn't the full definition. If you look in my paper on topological mirror symmetry, there are a few other technical conditions. So let me just say, for some other boring conditions, but I needed to throw in a few more conditions to get the proofs to work.
So the idea that it can be, so it is everything, that it's
that's right. So I mean, a typical example would be a lattice generated by 1 and 1 over 2 pi I log z as a lattice in C. When z is 0, you lose this bit here.
The limit is always discrete.
It's always a discrete group. That's right, yeah. Okay, so now let me introduce the local monodromy group. So if you have, say, a point B0, delta, let's take a small open neighborhood of B0. So the picture that you should think of is that we have delta, which is a graph, say, with three edges coming in. And U is small enough so that all we see in of delta are these branches coming out of this point. Now you can fix some base point B, so B and U minus delta, and then you get a representation rho of pi 1 of U minus delta based at B into the automorphism group of the H lower 1 of the fiber at B. So what this is if you have a loop around a branch here, you just follow in the Torah, you follow the one cycle as you move along the loop, and when you get back, you may not get back to the same one cycle. Okay, so we'll say that the fiber B0 is semi-stable if the image of this map is a unipotent subgroup. So one should think of that as, in some basis, the monodromies. Well, let me, since I'm always in three dimensions, I might as well write a 3x3 matrix. So the monodromy will always look like that in a suitable basis. Okay, so this is analogous in two dimensions. This selects out the Kodaira type IN fibers. Of course, I've ruled out IN for n bigger than 2, but those are the semi-stable elliptic curves. And so this is the analogy in a higher dimension. Okay, now the important thing is that with all of these conditions I put on, we can actually classify all the semi-stable monodromy groups. Okay, so here are the following possibilities. What's that? Everything is well behaved now. Well, the first possibility is that our point is just on some edge of the graph. So in that case, you have just one loop. Pi one is just z, and the monodromy is this matrix. So this is what you're going to get if you have a singular fiber which looks like a Kodaira type I1, the pinched torus, cross S1. So this is the generic case. Okay, now for the interesting cases. The next case is that you have a trivalent vertex, and you have the following three monodromy transformations about the three branches. So the condition, of course, is that the product of these two things, well, the product of the three, if you go around in the right order, has to be the identity. In this case, the fundamental group is the free group on two generators, but in fact, the image is commutative, so it's just Z squared. So in this case, it's called a negative vertex. For reasons we'll see a bit later. Third case. The third case is going to be dual to this. So if you want to dualize the vibration, then essentially what you're doing is you're taking the transpose or transpose inverse of these matrices. So I'll just write down the transpose. The monodromy will in fact be the dual representation. So that's the called a positive vertex. And dualizing, as I said, is going to interchange positive and negative vertices. I should really be putting the inverse. Let me put in. I mean, is that what you're worrying about? Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, the dualizing is. Let's see. Is there a? Yeah. There's a natural orientation. Well, in the special Lagrangian case, there's a natural orientation on the base, but I'm not using that here. I mean, when we talk about these loops, you have to choose some set of generators for pi one. Yeah, I mean they're definitely different. There's no.
No matter what.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one way to see that is the fixed, the invariants are different. Things left invariant by the. So H0, the local system, are different. Okay, the last case is a quadruple vertex. And there's actually a whole series of these. And the monodromy about the four branches. Is as follows. Where A is an element of Z. And any of these values of A can be realized. This is, of course, determined by, again, the product of the four of them should be the identity. So this is the only degree of freedom, is this A. Now, actually, when I classified these, I was rather annoyed that this case existed and never actually made use of it. But Dave Morrison did find out that there were some nice uses for this this sort of picture here.
Can you get these gluing through together?
Yeah, so I don't remember the exact details, but I think that, so for various values of A, Dave claimed that there were a number of ways of deforming this. One was that you had some sort of, I'm just sort of remembering what he said after a cloakroom talk. You had some sort of picture like this, where you had a ladder with sort of positive vertices and negative vertices, and that you could sort of collapse all this into one of these, with a number of rungs in the ladder being somehow related to A. He also had another picture where you could deform it to something with these intertwined, I can't really draw it, some intertwined curves which don't intersect. And Dave was using this to somehow start to deform one sort of discriminant locus to another, pulling curves through each other. Anyway, it looked like great fun, but I've never seen the details. For us anyway, today I'll just focus on the first three cases. So that's all that happens. You only have at most a quadrivalent graph, and the interesting bit of mirror symmetry is going to happen in the story with the trivalent vertices. Okay, so the next step is to give you examples of singular fibers that have this sort of monotropy. So for one, this is easy because this is just a higher dimensional version of our I1. So if x to delta, not delta, x to a disk D is a T2 fibration with a I1 singular fiber, as we saw last time, then you just cross this with an interval, say, and S1, and you project down to D cross the interval, and now you have a whole curve of singular fibers of type I1 cross S1. Okay, so that's easy. Now I'll do the negative vertex. And this construction will look similar to what I did for constructing the I1 fiber in the Aguri-Vafa metric yesterday. So here's the construction. So let's start with a ball B, three-dimensional ball, and let's take our three-pronged widget inside B. Like that. And let's let Y bar be this three ball cross a two torus. So this is five-dimensional. And just as in the case of the I1 fiber, where I built up a four-manifold as an S1 bundle over a three-manifold, I'm going to do the same here. I'm going to get my six-manifold by building S1 bundle over this, which will degenerate along a certain surface. So let's let S contained in B cross T2 be, say, a pair of pants mapping to delta. Now, fortunately, we already saw this pair of pants, the way it maps in Kenji's talk yesterday. So I'll draw a picture of this. So the picture is that we are going to have this pair of pants. Mapping down to our trivalent widget. The fibers in general will be circles, but there's one special fiber sitting over here, and I mean, you have some choice about what to take as that special fiber. It'll be something like a figure eight. You can take it to be figure eight if you want. So basically what you've done is you've thought of this as joining three cylinders together at this, along this T2. Now, the other thing we have to be careful about is the class of this S1 as it sits inside the T2. And again, this is exactly as Kenji did yesterday. We need to take three classes which add up to the zero. So we take, in particular, after change of basis, we'll take, say, these three homology classes. So this will be a circle of one generator of homology in the torus. This will be the other generator, and then this will be there. Minus their sum.
So what's the fiber of general point on the graph?
A general point is just a circle. And then over here we add, well, we have a fiber which is, say, two circles. Yeah, I'm not there yet. I'm just describing S. So far, all we have, so what we have so far is we have a T2 vibration, a trivial T2 vibration, and a surface sitting inside it. So now the next step. So this is S. Is to start adding more circles. So let's let Y be Y bar minus S. And then you can compute the second cohomology of Y. H2 of YZ splits as H2 of a 2 torus. That was the cohomology of the product of Y bar. But then you get an additional copy of Z. And now let's take an S1 bundle. X to Y with first Chern class equal to 0, 1. So it should be the 0 class in here, and it should be 1 in here. What's that? So that comes from a 2, well, let's see. That's right, yeah. So it should be something with boundary on, or co-boundary. Well, it comes from the S. I always just think of the relative exact cohomology sequence. It comes from that. Okay, so now we do the same thing we did last time. We have this... S1 bundle, and we compactify to get a vibration, S1 vibration over Y bar, where we have degeneration over the surface S. So X bar will be disjoint union of X and S, and this maps S isomorphically down to S. And again, we can do that compactification to manifold X bar, precisely because of the choice of the one there. And now we have the projection down to B from Y bar, and we take this as our vibration. That's right, yeah. No, X bar is a manifold. Let me give you, since we did this yesterday too, let me give you the local model for what's going on. the local model is the map from R4 to R3, which I want to think of. What's the format for it? So in polar coordinates, what this is the Hopf map. So on for a given radius, we're mapping the S3 to an S2 via the Hopf map. And that's a circle bundle, except at the origin where we degenerate. So the point is that the bad locus is codimension 3 here. And that's what we're doing sort of transversely here. No. So actually, this is something. So Weidong Ron says he has a Lagrangian model for this, and I've been struggling for half a year or a year to try to understand his construction. And there are always technical problems. So I don't know whether there's a Lagrangian model or not. There's one problem that should become clear right away is that if you're trying to do this smoothly, you're going to have trouble here. So you either, you have a choice. You either don't have a smooth structure on this, in which case X bar won't have a smooth structure, or you lose the differentiability of the vibration. So you have a choice of one or the other. Maybe there's some subtle way of getting a bit better. That's right, yeah. So this is why, it was struggling with this example that made me really believe Dominic Joyce was right, too, that there's no way to make this smooth. There's difficulties. It's very subtle. It's easy to describe topologically, as I've just done, but it seems to be very subtle to get in a Lagrangian way. The other one is much easier. I can do in a special Lagrangian way. And I'll show you in a minute that one. But let's just understand the structure of this vibration a bit better. So what are the fibers? Fiber of this was a T2, and so a fiber of this is an S1 bundle over the T2. But because I've chosen 0 here, it's a trivial S1 bundle. So it's actually 3 torus. So the fibers are 3 tori. But if the 2 torus fiber here intersected S, then you get some degeneration. So generically over here, the T2 intersects S in a circle, and what you'll get is just an I1 cross S1. So the picture here is, so generically we have an I1 cross S1 fiber, but over here we have something which is a bit harder to describe. The T2 intersects the surface in a figure 8. So if I draw a 2 torus and draw a figure 8 on it, like that, then our singular fibers fibered over this in circles, with the circles contracting down to points along the figure 8. So sort of draw with lots of circles here, getting smaller, approaching this. I have no idea how to really draw it, but there it is. Okay, and an important point here is that the Euler characteristic of this fiber is minus 1. It's the Euler characteristic of this figure 8. And that's why I called, or actually Dave Morrison suggested calling it a negative vertex. Okay, so that's the negative vertex. So what about the positive vertex? For this, I'll just write down an explicit example, which is, well, it's only Lagrangian. It's special Lagrangian, but not really in a Ricci flat metric, or not with the right scaling. So let's take X to be C3 minus locus where 1 plus z1 times z2 times z3 is 0. And then we'll define a map f from x, R3, as follows. F of z1, z2, z3 is abscissa of z1 squared minus abscissa of z2 squared, abscissa of z1 squared minus abscissa of z3 squared, log of abscissa value 1 plus z1, z2, z3. So this is all right because I've removed the locus where this is 0. So it's not too hard to analyze what's going on here. You have a T2 invariance. So as long as you act by multiply these three coordinates by e to the I thetas so that this doesn't remains invariant, this whole expression will remain invariant. So there's a T2 action, and that allows you to describe the fibers. You essentially get singular fibers when they contain smaller dimensional orbits. And the smallest dimensional orbit is the origin that's fixed by this T2 action. And so there's one singular fiber containing the origin, which is the most singular one. So the picture here is, again, you have some trivalent discriminant locus. And generically, you have an I1 cross S1 because you have a T2 dropping to an S1. But over here, you have a whole T2 contracting to a point. So you have the higher dimensional analog of the pinched torus. This is a pinched, well, take a 3 torus, and you pinch a 2 torus down to a point. So that's perhaps the most expected of singular fibers. And this one has chi equals plus 1. OK, now I won't bother explaining the number 4 because we're not going to use it. It's a bit more complicated. But you do the same sort of thing you do up there. You just have to take something more complicated. Surface in a somewhat more complicated five-dimensional manifold. That's right, you're always one step ahead of me because that's the corollary of the examples. So the corollary is that if we're given B and B0 contained in B with B minus B0 a graph and a torus bundle so x0 to b0, call it f0, which has monodromy of the sort that we have classified. So in other words, only has trivalent and quadrivalent vertices, and around each vertex you have the given description of monodromy, then you can compactify. And this is done just by gluing in the examples locally and making sure there's no obstruction to doing that. So more important, well, the corollary of the corollary is that if f from x to v is a well-behaved vibration, with only semi-stable fibers, then you can dualize. No, I'm not saying anything about uniqueness. I mean, there's one obvious bit of non-uniqueness, is just the topology. You know, for example, how is that surface actually sitting inside the T2 cross Y? You know, you could have a different singular fiber, which is a bit more complicated.
My question is that it is possible to exclude any other type of singular fiber here. I mean, you classify it for the model.
That's right,
you
yeah.
You have an example for each model.
That's right, yeah.
But then, are there any possibilities that there are some other examples that are the same model, but topologically different?
So the fibers themselves can be topologically different, but I don't think, but I haven't tried to prove that the total space can be different.
Yeah, but then the corollary, to prove the corollary, you mean somehow the one you get, you start with, is one of these examples?
No, not necessarily. Okay, I mean, how do you prove this? So the question is what, well, first of all, what did dual mean? Well, we had sort of a definition of dual in the first lecture where we dualize the non-singular part. So we start, let me take the proof. We dualize F0, X0 to B0. We don't care what's in the singular fibers. And then compactified according to the recipe. And that's allowable dual.
But if you dualize twice, you might not get it.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Because I only have so much time in the lecture.
Oh, but you have...
Yeah, it exists, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just need to write down an example for every possible A, and then you glue it in like the rest. So just to finish writing this down, you dualize this, and the point is that in dualizing gives you the transpose inverse of the monodromy, and that is still monodromy, which is allowable, so you can still compactify. Okay, I think if you really want some sort of uniqueness, you would have to have special Lagrangian, but as we know, this dualizing isn't, based on what I said in the first lecture, this dualizing probably isn't going to work anyway in the special Lagrangian case. So one should view this as the crude topological thing is sort of the first step of some much more complicated procedure. Okay, so, I mean, this is all well and good, but it's nice to know whether this actually now explains a genuine example of mirror symmetry. So, of course, the standard example of mirror symmetry is the quintic, so we should take a look at that. Okay, so I'm going to show you how to sort of build a quintic with your bare hands. So, first of all, if I want to get I'm going to really build a torus bundle and then use this theorem to compactify. If I want to build a torus bundle, as I showed in the first lecture, what we should do is write down an affine structure. So I'm going to construct an affine manifold which will give us the quintic. So here's how we do it. So we'll construct B0 contained in B and an affine structure on B0. Well, let's start by taking, let's select C, since I can't use delta, C is the reflexive polytope corresponding to the quintic. So it's the polytope contained in R4. So it's the polytope which is the convex hull. -1, -1, -1, -1, -1, or -1, -1, -1 up to that. Okay, so that's a 4 simplex. And let's let B be the boundary of C, which is homeomorphic to S3. So, in order to put an affine structure on some subset of B, I need to give a bunch of coordinate charts. So, there are two sorts of charts, of open sets I wanted to find coordinates on. First, if sigma is a three-fix, of C, so it's one of the top dimensional simplices in the boundary. The interior of, well, sigma is sitting naturally inside R4, and in particular the interior of sigma is also sitting naturally in R4, and that spans an affine hyperplane, so that will be my affine chart there. In sigma sits naturally in an affine hyperplane of R4. Okay, so that gives you charts that cover everything but the two skeleton of the simplex. So the second thing is that for each integral vertex, well, integral V, integral point in boundary of C, we'll take a small open neighborhood of V. And I'll be a bit more specific shortly. But we need in particular UV should be disjoint, should be empty. UV intersect UV prime should be empty for V not equal to V prime. Okay, and then I just wanted to find a coordinate chart on UV. Let's let psi v from uv, this is some subset of R4, I'll project onto R4 modulo the span of v. So you can check that this is actually gives you an embedding of UV. UV is some three-dimensional open set, and it actually does embed. If UV is small enough, it embeds into this. And also, the transition maps between, say, one of these psi Vs and one of the embeddings of sigma into the affine hyperplane, that's clearly linear, or affine linear. So thus, we get an affine structure on B0, which will be the union of the interiors of the three faces, plus, well, union, the open sets UV. So the only thing is that we have had to leave something out. We haven't covered the entire manifold because of this condition. We're leaving something out on the two skeleton. So what do we leave out? Well, we have to make some choice here. So to choose B0 precisely, let's choose some triangulation of the of C. Now the important thing is going to be how we triangulate the two faces. So let me just draw one two face. And draw the standard triangulation. Let me try again, because that's a bit too sloppy. Okay, so there's the sort of most regular triangulation of the one of these two faces, but I mean you can choose any triangulation that you want. Now, the point is that these UVs are open neighborhoods of these points, these integral points. So we really just need to sort of decide where we're going to draw the boundary between the two, the different UVs. And we can do that, having chosen the triangulation, we can do that just by drawing a graph, which is the one skeleton of the dual cell complex. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, just look at the picture. There it is. Probably transparency would have helped here. Anyway, so there's the thing. So we get this graph, which is really quite complicated graph. I've just drawn this on one of the faces. There are 10 faces. And in particular, notice we have sort of two different, qualitatively different sorts of sorts of vertices. You have these interior ones. You also have these edge ones. And you have to remember these are trivalent vertices because every edge is contained in three faces. So these are actually also trivalent vertices coming off there. Okay, so there is our B0. So I've drawn delta, this is delta, and B, we take B0 is B minus delta. And then I can make sure that I've chosen my open set so that we actually cover B0. So I like to think of the open sets UV as little pegs fitting together the different three faces.
These are coming sharps
overlap. Well, the UVs and the sigmas overlap, but we don't allow none of the sigmas intersect and none of the UVs intersect.
But where they overlap, they're not. Are they related by an affine?
Yeah, because it's a linear, the relation is just by linear projection from an affine hyperplane to the R4 mod RV. But the important point is that there's an incompatibility between those, between different projections onto different things, which is why we need to separate these open sets. And it's that incompatibility which gives us monodromy around this discriminant locus. So one then has to compute. So here's our affine manifold. We then have to compute monodromy And what we discover when we do that is that the red vertices are negative. We get the right sort of monodromy to for a well-behaved vibration. The white vertices are negative, and the blue vertices are positive.
When you say we get a good monodromy, you mean for the source vibration of the printing current in the moment?
No. Sorry. The monodromy of just x0, of that's tb0 star modulo lambda to b0. Remember, in my first lecture, there was, given an affine structure, you get a torus bundle. And that's the torus bundle that we're working with. So you can compute the monodromy. It involves understanding exactly how the affine structure behaves in these neighborhoods.
How do you define the
lambda? That was just the one generated locally by dy1 through dyn, where y1 through yn are affine coordinates.
You define this affine structure, and you can prove that it monodromy is in SLVT.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So this gives you. So at the end of this construction, x0 to b0 then can be compactified to a vibration from x to b. Now, of course, the quintic at the moment is nowhere in sight. What I've really done is shown you how to construct a six-manifold by hand, which I rather like because it's somehow, when you write down an algebraic variety, you don't see its topology very well. So the red vertices are compactified with minus 1, and the blue with plus 1.
So this is, you can compute these monodromes just by linear algebra.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a very, very straightforward computation. Okay, so let's compute chi of x, the Euler characteristic of x, just to convince ourselves that it's the right thing. So the only contribution to the Euler characteristic, you can just add up all the Euler characteristics of the singular fibers. You have, there are 25 in each face, there are 25 of these red vertices, you can count them, 25 triangles there. So we have 10 times 25 with a minus sign, because those are the number of negative vertices. But then we have 5 positive vertices along each edge. There are 10 edges, so that's 10 times 5, which is minus 200. It's the exterior. It's the blue. Oh, I guess the blue doesn't really show up, does it? Try. Ah, that looks more blue. Does it look blue? Yeah. So it's the exterior vertices, which are positive.
Yeah. Do you think that UV shot around the exterior, do we see the three branches of the graph coming in different places in this?
Yeah.
So you look at this picture.
That's right, yeah. If you sort of spread it out a bit, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the plane is the plane of the... at the blue vertices, you have three. All vertices are trivalent. So the blue vertices, there are three faces, two faces containing each edge. So there are three edges coming into each blue vertex. Yeah. Yeah, so I think Dave claimed that he had checked that you can do some sort of play some sort of games like that where you then replace it with or sort of pull these two things through each other and get things twisting around each other. But again, I haven't seen any details of that, so I don't know. I mean, but there's clearly a lot of fun and games you can do with this sort of picture.
So if you divide each edge modifier by 10, you get 10 for
every. Sorry, say that again.
I mean, you can triangulate this, by dividing each edge into 5.
Right.
But you can do it finally.
I wanted to use just integral points.
Oh.
There.
So for this part, integral.
Yeah. Yeah, otherwise we definitely won't get the right answer. Okay, so the theorem now. So I proved it in my original paper on this. I proved X is diffeomorphic to the quintic. I wanted a fast proof of this. And the fastest proof I could think of was to use Wall's theorem on classification of six manifolds. This is kind of a stupid thing to do, but it works. You need to identify, so Wall's theorem says that there's a certain list of invariants of a six manifold, which if two six manifolds have the same invariants, they are diffeomorphic. So you compute those invariants and you show it's a quintic. Now, perhaps less stupid is then to use this construction of dualizing and use it abstractly, so you get an X hat. This is diffeomorphic to the mirror quintic. Well, you can, you see, everything can be done compactify smoothly. You have to be careful with that one point I mentioned. But if you're willing to lose the differentiability of the map, you can compactify in a smooth way.
Yeah, but here you're sort of diffeomorphic.
That's right, yeah. But once it has a smooth structure, there's no other smooth structure. The vibrations won't be smooth in that structure. Okay, so I felt it was important to use Wall's theorem here. Here I thought it was kind of stupid, but here I thought it was important because we've constructed the mirror in an abstract way. We have an algorithm for constructing these duals, and we want to know it's the right algorithm. So there it's important, having constructed the mirror in this way, it's important to show abstractly that it's diffeomorphic to the mirror. So shortly after I did this work, Ron claimed that Weidong Ron claimed that he can construct Lagrangian P3 vibrations. On hypersurfaces in torque varieties. And actually, this construction of the affine structure wasn't in my original paper, but was inspired partly by his construction. His description, the topological description of the vibrations he gives, is definitely correct, but there's definitely some technical problems in pushing through the Lagrangian bit at the moment. So let me just end today's lecture by saying there's one other cute thing to observe here. I mean, those of you who've played around with the mirror quintic know that there's not one mirror quintic. There are many birational models that are related by flops. And how do you get those different birational models? Well, this picture shows up in the resolution of the mirror quintic. And if you use a different triangulation, you get a different resolution. So for example, you might have, I'll just draw a bit of the picture here. You might have had a diagram like that, in which case delta is something like that. Or you might perform a flop and and you get that picture. Now, in the original, on the Quintic side, this didn't make a difference, right? We had some choice in doing this, and I claim it didn't actually make any difference to the topology of the total space. And sort of intuitively, one reason why it doesn't make a difference, remember these guys are negative vertices. The critical locus above a negative vertex is a topological surface. So the critical locus over sitting over this this curve, this Feynman diagram, is a surface like this, while over here it's a surface, a similar surface, well, in fact, the same surface, like that. It's just mapping down in two different ways to a Feynman diagram. So the fact that these two surfaces are the same, of course, is the underlying thing that makes string theory work. And so I thought it was kind of cute that, I mean, that explains why no matter what triangulation you use, you get the same, topologically the same thing, i.e. the quintic. But when you dualize, you lose this nice picture, and you no longer get diffeomorphic duals. So you have two different vibrations on the quintic whose dualizing gives two topologically distinct mirrors. And that explains this old result of Aspinwall, Green, and Morrison about multiple mirrors and topology change. So let me also say that, you know, I've actually constructed an affine structure. So this thing has a natural symplectic structure on it. So it should be possible, I haven't gone through this, but it should be possible to construct a Lagrangian vibration on X directly by compactifying a Lagrangian way. But that's still somewhat difficult. You need local models, which we still don't have. But there's no real theoretical obstruction to getting Lagrangian vibrations using this method. The hard part is proving it's symplectomorphic to the quintic. I don't know how to do that. Okay, so I'll stop there for today. Yeah?
Can you maybe say a few words about how you arrive at this classification of monotropism?
Yeah, so this goes back to this old notion of simple vibrations that I talked about at Harvard many years ago, which many of the audience wasn't here there for. So the idea is that the conditions I put on the singular fibers, this in the well-behaved condition, tells you that the cohomology of a singular fiber is equal to the cohomology of the nearby non-singular fiber, or the set of invariants of the cohomology under monodromy. So you just take a look at the action of monodromy on a nearby non-singular fiber, and the set of invariants is the... and this is even true, more importantly, this is true mod n. So let's take a look at a specific example. Let's do it in a two-dimensional case, and I'll show you how to get the standard form of the monodromy. This follows from this well-behaved hypothesis. Yeah. So there's quite a bit of topology you have to do to prove this, but it is provable. You run lots of special sequences. And then it's a sort of simple argument. So suppose that H I of X B 0 Z is, so H 0 is always Z, H 2 is always Z. But let's suppose that H 1 drops rank by 1. Let's look at, see what the monodromy will be in this case. So this says there's one invariant cycle. So let's say E1 in H1 invariant and extend to a basis. So what's the monodromy in this basis? Well, it has to be something like this for some n, because it has to be in, well, I'm assuming now it's in SL2Z. So the only question here is what goes here. And that's where we use this condition. We look at cohomology mod n, and you see if n is non-zero, oh sorry, if n is not equal to 1, that implies H1 of XB0 Z mod nZ is actually equal to Z mod nZ squared, which is a contradiction, because it should be Z mod rank 1 Z mod nZ.
1 or minus.
Yeah, so it's 1 or minus 1, but that's just a question of orientation of the loop on the base. And then you use the same tricks in three dimensions. So the real work is really going into this statement, but...
How do you rule out the two-dimensional space in
Bayes? Semi-stability. In the well-behaved condition, that will force the singular to be, the fiber to be non-singular, because the lambda will be full rank lattice, and, the lambda is H1. It will be full rank lattice, so it has to be non-singular. The analog of, you mean dimension 4 and higher, or, you're going to get, you'll have to start playing around with various subgroups of the upper triangular unipotent matrices. And, it probably gets, I haven't tried to do it, but it seems to get fairly complicated. Right?
Is it reduced to a combinatorial problem?
It should be, I
imagine. Classifying unipotent groups with some extra conditions like...
It should be. I had some problem sort of making full use of this condition in higher dimensions, though. That didn't seem to work as... I mean, the arguments weren't as easy, and I decided I'll just stick with three dimensions. Someone can certainly work on that. The other thing is trying to classify the non-unipotent monodromy groups. There's no reason why you can't do that either. I think, if I recall, you can get up to perhaps five valent vertices in the non-unipotent case. But then it's sort of harder to figure out how the monodromies fit together.
The thing that stopped me in direct looping, this is taking off the quintic or the real quintic, is what Kenji was mentioning. You have this model away from the thing that the scrum is like, and you don't have any meat.
No, the thing that stops me from proving is diffeomorphic the quintic directly is that I just have to do what Ron is claiming he does in his papers. I'm waiting for him to do it.
You know topologically the quintic has a similar vibration. Scrum and both is one of them.
The question is, where did this picture arise? It arises from trying to understand what's really happening in the singular large complex structure limit. And it should not be difficult to show directly that this you do get this. But I haven't due to the obstruction of certain papers. It's purely social, not mathematical. Yeah, it's the same picture.
Okay, thanks, Mark.